Morning. The company's in great shape to deliver on the financial objectives I'm going to go through here today. Company has, obviously fantastic global market positions, great brands, very broad global reach, manufacturing capability, I think unparalleled around the world. And obviously at the center of all this is our R&D machine that works in a very unique and effective way. So we have a great ability to deliver consistent margins, returns, and free cash flow. So the presentation that I'm going to walk through, I've organized into three subject areas here this morning. First, balance sheet strength, followed by sustainable EPS growth, and then finally wrapping up with returning cash to shareholders. So starting with the balance sheet, if you look at capital structure and allocation of cash, this is really a couple of the most important things that I do as CFO. And as I look at 3M, what do I observe? I observe a company 110 years old. I observe a company that's in a constant state of reinventing itself. So if you look at the businesses that the company's invented, in a number of cases, sectors and segments that didn't exist previously 15 or 20 years ago. If you look at things like our optical films, which enabled LCD TVs and devices, and the solar industry, if you see some of the examples today, ACCR cable, which is transforming the utility industry. If you look at Cubitron True 2, which we've heard about, having a huge impact on the abrasives business. So constant change in terms of the business and the business model. What's also true for us is the company has exited. They've created businesses over time and either exited or sold them. If you think about things like audio and videotape, if you think about medical devices and immune response modifiers, which were part of a pharmaceutical business that we chose to exit a few years ago. So that's constantly changing as well. And then you think about the number of recessions and booms and busts that the company's gone through over time. Over a long period of time, what's true for the company is we've been able to survive all that and continue to become a stronger business as a result of a combination of a very good business model along with a very stable and strong financial position. Look at capital allocation. The way I think about that is really in two different areas. And this is about balancing the needs of the various stakeholders, that being customers and suppliers, that being employees, our lenders, and of course our shareholders. And so as we work through capital allocation on an ongoing basis, really the way I think of it is two buckets. First of all, meeting the operational needs of the company, allowing us to invest and to continue to grow the business in the strategic direction that we're looking for. So that's about investing in R&D. We talked today about upping that investment going forward. That's about continuing to invest in capital expenditures, which I'll talk about here. That's investing in acquired businesses that make sense for the portfolio to help us to strengthen and grow the business. And then the second bucket is obviously returning cash to shareholders via dividends and buybacks. I also think it's important for us to maintain adequate financial flexibility in how we allocate capital so that we're in a position to quickly respond to opportunities that may arise, whether it be strategic ones such as acquisitions, whether it be funding buyback opportunities that we see. So that's one area. A second area that we have to look at in capital allocation is the sources, the availability of cash, and where that cash is located around the world as the model changes. And then finally, we're managing business and market risk. So if you look at the goals going forward for the company, a couple things that I would just note here. We expect to continue to generate premium operating margins and return on invested capital, which is really an outcome of the diversified business model that we have that's based on both disciplined capital allocation and operational excellence. If you look at the company, and I think you can, all of you who follow us understand it, from many looking on the outside, it looks like a traditional conglomerate, but as you understand the business, it's really a single, very integrated global business that has some very strong strategic assets in R&D, manufacturing process technology, our subsidiary network, and also this intense focus on operational excellence. That enables us to deliver return on invested capital. We've been delivering that over recent years here around 20%. Actually, if you look past into history, the company's actually been delivering at this level over a number of decades, and we expect that to continue going forward. And then operating margins, which obviously are a component of ROIC, we expect to continue to deliver as we have been in recent years. This morning, in terms of the rolling out the five-year objectives financially for the company, we've decided to add free cash flow conversion as one of those objectives, in that we feel that free cash flow generation has been certainly an important driver of the success of the business in the past, and we think that will continue in the future, and we really wanted to elevate this and its visibility to give it an appropriate place in terms of our financial targets. So we're targeting 100% free cash flow conversion over the next five-year period. If you look at our track record in this area, looking at the last 5 years, we've delivered at 99%. And interestingly, and I think a testament to the strength of the operating model, we've had consistent cash flow generation throughout the period. And in fact, the best year for cash flow generation was in the depth of the 2009 recession. So this kind of a cash flow generation really gives us confidence to continue to be able to invest throughout the entire economic cycle. Future drivers for us of cash flow conversion will include improved asset efficiency and also lower working capital and lower in pension and OPEB contributions, which I'll be talking about. If you turn then to drivers of EPS growth, there are certainly many levers for us to drive EPS growth. We have a highly variable cost structure, which allows us flexibility to adjust to economic cycles. So in periods of stronger economic growth, we can deliver EPS growth through better, more focused on top-line performance. And through weaker periods of economic growth, as we're experiencing right now, we're able to drive more operational efficiency to deliver on that. So as we evolve the model, we expect to continue to drive down our costs, including our tax rate. We continue to put the balance sheet to work, so by executing acquisitions, which will be contributors to EPS, and also reducing our share count over time. So turning first to drivers of EPS growth, Inge talked about the fact that we have in the past decade delivered organic growth at 1.5 times IPI, and that's what we expect to do, that or better going forward. If you look at this on a geographic basis, what we'd observe over the last 10 years, we've grown in developing markets at 12% annually, and we're forecasting now over the next 5 years to be growing at 8 to 12%, led by strength in Latin America and developing Asia. If you look at organic sales in developed markets, we expect 2 to 4% growth over the period, with the U.S. being a key contributor to this growth. So you've heard this morning from three of our five newly forming business groups, industrial, healthcare, and electronics and energy. Our five-year organic growth targets for these businesses are 3 to 6% for industrial, 4 to 7% for healthcare, and 3 to 7% for electronics and energy. The two businesses you did not hear from today were consumer and safety and graphics. Consumer has a strong presence in retail channels around the globe. The business is the home of many of our category-defining brands, with particular strength in the U.S., Latin America, Japan, and building capability in developing Asia. We expect for the five-year period that the consumer group will deliver 3 to 6% organic growth. And then finally, safety and graphics, which has leading positions in personal safety products, highway safety, motor vehicle registration, and corporate brand identity solutions. And we expect that growth in this business will be driven by industrial manufacturing activity, government funding, and corporate advertising budgets. We expect the organic growth for that business to be 4 to 6% over the planning period. And if you look at the total company, as we've talked about today, we expect 4 to 6% organic growth as the goal, which we think is something that's aggressive but certainly deliverable. Supporting organic growth-driven model, of course, is a strong commitment to sustained investment in capital equipment and manufacturing process technologies. We're a leader in roll-to-roll precision coating manufacturing technology, as a majority of our products are made using roll-to-roll manufacturing processes. Our manufacturing base is leveraged across many businesses and geographies, which creates scale advantage for the company and also operational efficiency to serve both local and global customers. 2011 was the first year in the company's history that we had more than 50% of our capital was deployed internationally, and we expect that trend to continue going forward as we continue to drive localization, particularly in the developing markets. We're expecting to continue what has been a historical investment level of around 5% of sales. We think that'll continue here in the future. Turning to acquired growth, I think it's important for me to give you transparency in this area. It's a key part of our capital allocation model, and it's a piece of the puzzle that supports our growth strategy going forward. Our capability, if I think about 3M with acquisitions, we typically add value to an acquired company by bringing and leveraging our R&D capability, by bringing and leveraging to those companies manufacturing scale, global distribution capability, strong brand positions, and operational excellence. And also, as we acquire these businesses, we're looking for the addition of technology, filling of product gaps, sometimes manufacturing capacity, brands, or extending a presence in underserved markets. So we've stepped up recently the prioritization process, again in line with what Inga talked about, to ensure that we have a very good quality in terms of the acquisition pipeline, and really focusing on identifying strategic areas of investment as we look at acquisitions so we get to the right targets. And importantly, we also say no when we think they're not the right ones. The acquisitions on this slide are the 25 largest transactions that represent over 80% of the investment capital we've deployed to acquisitions since 2006. So what you can see is we've broken it into two groups. There are 15 transactions that were completed prior to the recession and have obviously struggled to meet their original forecast as a result of that. Since the beginning of 2009, we've completed 10 acquisitions, and performance here is improved quite substantially. You can see 8 of 10 of those deals is meeting on a cumulative basis the sales forecast we set out at the time we pursued the acquisition, and 7 of 10 of these are meeting their cumulative EBITDA forecasts. So looking ahead, we expect to invest $1 to $2 billion annually on acquisitions, which will add an estimated 1 to 3% to annual sales growth. This slide shows 8 of those acquisitions, of those 10 acquisitions we completed from 2009 to 11. And as you can see, 6 of the 8 acquisitions are meeting both sales and EBITDA expectations. The exceptions are Cogent, which is ahead on sales and behind on EBITDA, and Attenti, which is behind on both sales and EBITDA expectations. Both of these companies are contract-driven businesses, which creates lumpiness in performance and depends on success in winning contracts. We've determined here that our most successful transactions are the ones that most effectively leverage 3M's core R&D capability, manufacturing, global distribution, and operational excellence, and have a strong integration execution. If you look at 2012, we've consummated two transactions which make up the remaining of the 10 that I've talked about. And these are very strategically important for our businesses in traffic safety and health information systems. FS Tech participates in the electronic tolling market, which is increasingly moving to smart solutions which improve revenue yield management. This acquisition gives us the ability to extend the current offerings that we have, enabling us to provide complete solutions to state and local governments and law enforcement in the areas of highway safety and maintenance, vehicle registration, and now adding toll collection. CodeWright adds natural language processing capability to our very successful health information systems software business that Brad talked about. Natural language processing speeds up the coding of medical procedures and improves the accuracy of coding. Finally, we announced the acquisition of Ceradyne, which is a leader in advanced ceramic technologies. The transaction is still pending as we're in the midst of the tender offer for this deal, and this we expect to close in the fourth quarter of this year. Turning to operational excellence, we have an excellent track record in this area, as evidenced by premium return on invested capital and operating margins. The presenters obviously have talked a lot today and given you great examples of the first two items I mentioned here, Lean Six Sigma and Hoshin Kanri. So I'm going to take a few minutes to cover the other three items on the chart, which is updating you on the progress of our global ERP implementation, covering and sharing with you the establishment and benefits of supply chain centers of excellence that we're working on. And then finally, I'm going to give you an update on our employee retirement programs. So starting with business transformation, this is the chart I showed last year where I shared the fact that we were kicking off a global ERP project based on SAP. And this is really about standardizing business processes globally, which we expect by when fully deployed will deliver annual profit improvements of $500 million to the company and a one-time working capital benefit of $500 million. If you look at this project where we're at today, we're very much on track and have not experienced any unpleasant surprises. In fact, any of the surprises we've had have been quite positive thus far. During 2012, the team who's working on this project have finished the phase one, which is the design and development of our core system capability, which has been now completed. And a major focus for us was the first deployment of that, which was done in Taiwan in September, which has gone very well. Right now, then, during the last half of 2012, we've started on the final phase two, which will give us the full system capability. That design process will be completed here into 2013, and the first deployment of the full capability will be in Canada. So that'll be a particular focus for us next year, and it's a good case for us because Canada typically has a very broad footprint, which is essentially has the full capabilities that we have elsewhere in the company. Overall, the costs and the benefits for the program remain unchanged. So we're on track with that, and we're very pleased with how that's going. A second area I wanted to talk about today is around these supply chain centers of excellence. And I think importantly, what a global ERP system does is it's a key enabler for us to start to get at some of these long-standing issues that the company's had where we can really start to optimize some of our strategies by having standardization of business processes and improving our operational efficiency around the world. So what we're doing right now is we're in the midst of establishing supply chain centers of excellence in Switzerland and Panama, while also expanding our manufacturing capability in Singapore as a local source of supply for Asia Pacific. These centers of excellence will give us centralized order flow, drive manufacturing process efficiency, enhance fulfillment and distribution capability, and also improve our raw material sourcing effectiveness. So there are many financial benefits that come from these supply chain centers of expertise, such as lower cost to serve, reduced working capital, and also a lower effective tax rate. We're targeting a reduction by 2017 of our global tax rate to 27%, which is down 2 points from the current level. Turning now to our global retirement program, I thought I'd give you a little bit of a tutorial and open this space up, because it's a very significant obligation for the company, and it's had a significant impact on both the balance sheet and our financial results in recent years, and that will continue. So the first point I'd share is what's been going on in the company is over recent years we've been updating our plans for retirement to move to what is preferred nowadays in the market, which is for more portable retirement plans. So we've implemented defined contribution plans now in 20 countries around the world, including notably the US, Canada, the UK, Germany, Brazil, and Korea, just to name a few. We've also been maintaining the remaining legacy defined benefit plans on a well-funded basis, and as a result of that, we expect future funding requirements to start to moderate here in 2013. The forecast for our global retirement plan expense is that it will also start to diminish. It will certainly diminish over the planning period, and we expect that to start now in 2013. So first of all, looking at a snapshot of our defined benefit plan obligations, and what I would note is that the funded status of these plans, we're 85% funded worldwide and 92% funded in the U.S. as of the end of the third quarter. And we've achieved this funding status despite very significant declines in the discount rates by maintaining discipline to provide necessary contributions to the plans, as well as achieving top decile performance from management of our assets over the past decade. From an obligation perspective, the $23 billion total obligation is forecast now to be within 5% of the peak. So we're just arriving at the maximum before this starts to decline on a permanent basis. And we expect that as discount rates now stabilize, and importantly, as the transition to these new portable retirement plans accelerate, it causes this obligation to start to roll over. So we expect now the funding needs for these plans to decline by more than half as a percent of total free cash flow in the planning period versus our recent history. Turning now to how the retirement obligations find their way from the balance sheet to the income statement. First, reviewing recent history, we've absorbed a $540 million increase in expenses over the past 4 years in our income statement, and this has had actually a 2 percentage point unfavorable impact on our operating margins. We've more than offset that impact through that period, and in fact, our margins have increased during this period from 21 to now 22% this year, and we've done that through many of the efforts that you've heard about today, including Lean Six Sigma. Looking ahead, we expect our pension and OPEB expense to decline by $400 to $600 million by the end of the planning period as compared to 2012. And this decline in expense will be driven by several factors. The first and most significant factor is we amortize prior period losses over future periods. And what's happening now is that impact of that amortization is starting to decline quite substantially. Secondly, we expect, as I said, interest rates to stabilize at current levels and rise modestly through the period. Thirdly, we expect to deliver at the assumed rate of asset return as we have in the past. And then finally, as I mentioned, this rollover of these obligations as we trend towards more portable retirement programs will have a very significant and positive impact on our expense profile going forward. So finally, turning to return of cash to shareholders. Very few companies have the dividend track record of 3M, with 54 consecutive years of increasing the dividend and having paid dividends now for nearly 96 years. Dividends are an important part of our strategy to return cash to shareholders, having returned roughly $14 billion of cash to shareholders via dividends over the past decade. Looking ahead, we intend to increase dividends in line with earnings over time, with some years being above earnings growth and other years below, a real testament here to the confidence in the strength of our business model going forward. Looking at stock repurchase, if I think about this philosophically, I think of stock repurchase as the most discretionary use of our capital in capital allocation plans, but as a result of the strength of the balance sheet and expected free cash flow capability going forward, share repurchase will remain an important component of returning significant cash to shareholders. We've returned $17 billion of cash through share repurchases over the last decade, reducing the overall share count by an average of 1% per year, and we'll maintain a balanced commitment to repurchases going forward with a disciplined approach to value. The share repurchase program is expected to drive a 1 to 2% annual EPS growth over the planning period. So, summarizing, you've seen the goals as we've set them out: 9 to 11% EPS growth, 4 to 6% organic revenue growth, 20-plus percent return on invested capital, and 100% free cash flow conversion. We believe these are aggressive but very reasonable targets for the company going forward. So, summarizing, we have a unique and leverageable business model that ensures sustainable premium returns over the long term. We have a capital structure and an allocation model, which we think is the right one to match our own operating strategy. We'll invest in the business for future growth while funding global retirement programs and returning significant cash to shareholders. We're focused on operational excellence, driving business process standardization and supply chain localization, and we have an aggressive but balanced set of financial objectives driving long-term growth going forward. So that concludes my remarks, and what we'll do now is we'll just take a couple minutes to get everybody on stage to begin the Q&A session. Thank you.